Thank you for joining me for another episode of Shypedia Podcast. I'm your host, Marsha Marsha. And today on the phone line, I have an amazing woman, a phenomenal woman, Miss Susan Taylor Batten. She is the CEO and president of APFE. That's the Association of Black Foundation Executives. And thank you, Susan, for joining me.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
And what brings you here to Chicago?
Yeah, I'm in Chicago here to kick off our leadership summit for our Connecting Leaders Fellowship Program. It's really a signature program for APFE, and we bring in 11 fellows every year into a community of learning and a year-long learning experience to really sharpen their skills and their capacities to be philanthropic change agents for Black communities in their home places. And so each year we move this summit around, and we chose Chicago for a number of reasons. So we are here through tomorrow, really digging in and learning about what's going on here in this city as relates to our communities and what's the role of philanthropy to address some of the systemic issues that face us.
Okay, and can you please explain to us why APFE is important?
Yeah, APFE stands for the Association of Black Foundation Executives. We go by the name or the acronym APFE. And we are a philanthropic partnership for Black communities. Let me give you a little bit of background first on us. We were founded in 1971, and really to address the pretty stark disparities related to the diversity of professionals in the field of philanthropy, as well as the amount of resources being targeted to Black communities. So the organization really is about promoting effective and responsive philanthropy in Black communities. That actually is our mission, to promote effective and responsive philanthropy in Black communities. And our work really falls into two big buckets. One is ensuring that Black leaders have the opportunity to lead in the foundation community. There are over 70,000 foundations in this country, and we want to ensure that Black professionals and talent actually can rise to the C-suite. But the other bucket of our work is around ensuring that dollars are flowing to Black communities to address, as I said, systemic issues facing our people in an equitable and fair manner. So the organization is, in fact, one of several, I would say, philanthropy-serving organizations in the U.S. that's about nudging, encouraging, pushing the philanthropic sector to be more responsive to not only our community, but communities of color.
Okay. Now, I was reading, you were saying that billions of dollars are distributed each year by the nation's largest foundations, but less than 2% of those funds are given to organizations that are specifically Black-led and organized to uplift Black people. What can we do to get those numbers up? Is there something?
Well, you know, there are a number of things. There are a number of levers to pull, and it's you know, really the sort of through line for all of our work. First and foremost, we want to ensure that the leadership of these foundations that are doing really important work around the country are reflective of the population of the U.S. As I said, there are about 70,000 foundations around this country, yet the data suggests that we still only have about 7% of foundation trustees who are African-American, maybe about 5% of foundation CEOs who are African-American, and about 12% of program staff who represent our community. So as it relates to getting the dollars up, one of the things that we focus very much on is ensuring, again, that we can not only recruit but retain talent, Black talent, in this sector and help them rise to the C-suite. And that's really what this fellowship program is all about while we're here in Chicago today. And the other, you know, lever that we pull in terms of changing those numbers, Marsha, is really sort of focusing on the extent to which foundation policies and practices disadvantage Black communities or other communities of color. Again, well-intentioned foundations often are moving large pots of money in ways that don't reach our communities. Mm-hmm. And it's partly because often to receive foundation dollars, you have to have a certain level of infrastructure, right? You've got to have a lot of capacity around fund development and fundraising. And because historically our organizations have been underfunded, mm-hmm. you find that Black-led organizations around the country don't necessarily have the infrastructure that we need to actually access foundation dollars. At the same time, foundations can do more to ensure that the way in which they put money out, the ways in which they grant actually are equitable for our communities. So, one, we're focused on diversity within the sector, and then also we're looking at the sector's policies and practices and how people actually do grant making and making sure that they don't use policies that actually are barriers to Black communities receiving more funds.
Okay, so are you focused more on communities that struggle with poverty?
Yeah, I think the foundations that are part of our membership, so we're a national organization, we have close to 900 members around the country, and some of the largest foundations in this country are part of our membership. So it's the foundations, our members, that are actually doing the touch and the reach to Black communities. And I would say that it is, for the most part, a focus on the poorest Black communities, those that have been marginalized because not only of income, but perhaps place, we're looking not only just at urban Black communities, but rural Black communities. Mm-hmm. So for the most part, the sector is really focused on eradicating poverty. And when we sort of enter conversations with foundations, we're ensuring that we're talking about, looking at Black communities specifically. So it's a pretty intentional focus on low-income communities.
Okay. I'm actually from Gary, Indiana. It's definitely a community that's struggling. For a community like that, what will it take to get more advocacy?
Well, I think first and foremost, it's going to take organizing of community to bring it to the forefront. We actually advocate at ABFI, since we don't do grant making ourselves, but our members actually are the grant makers. We have got a framework that we push in the field about where funders should put their money, where grant makers should put their money. And one big area is in community organizing. So that actually allows for communities like Gary, right? Mm-hmm. Communities like Chicago, as it relates to the, Black communities that are struggling the most within these cities, to organize themselves and to actually put together agendas to change policy, right, to change practice of, you name it, school departments, health departments, criminal justice, systems. So we are a strong advocate for putting resources into community organizing directly into the hands of leaders within neighborhoods that are marginalized, so they can create their own agendas, quite frankly, and trying to get more foundations to do that and to resource the agendas that are literally organized by the grassroots.
Okay. And can you name a few communities that has really had an effect on?
Well, I think, I go immediately to California, and I'm thinking about there's been a concerted effort in a number of foundations in that state to really address the school-to-prison pipeline, as we describe it, in the field of, Black communities and also Latino communities that are, number one, disadvantaged by low-resource schools and living in neighborhoods that young Black boys, young brown boys actually experience over-surveillance by the police, all that has everything to do with, you know, connecting them, unfortunately, to the criminal justice system and the like. And several foundations in California, very much led by the California Endowment, have heavily invested in community organizing in select communities around the state. That has actually led to state-level policy change at the school district level around issues of school discipline, trying to curb the disproportionate push-out and suspension rates around for Black and Latino boys. So that's just one example about the coalition of foundations in California directly supporting youth organizing that ultimately has led to, you know, debate on the floor at the State House in California that has, you know, literally sort of influenced policies at the state level as it relates to education policies, as well as the district level to stop the disproportionate push out and suspension of Black boys and Latina boys that we all understand, given the research, is connected to the school-to-prison pipeline. So that's one example that comes up.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for that. And just a little bit about yourself. Like I was, you know, I was saying in the beginning, you've done a lot of things in this short span of life. So I see that you started out with USDA as an analyst.
Yeah.
And then now you transitioned over to become the president and CEO of ABFE. You know, what made you make such a big career change?
You know, it's interesting. And I would say, Marcia, even before my U.S. Department of Agriculture days, I was a public service worker. I was a city government worker in Washington, D.C., in the area of foster care. So my background really was public service. And as you mentioned, through my time at the U.S. Department of Agriculture, where I was managing research on child nutrition programs like the school lunch program and school breakfast and the WIC program. And, you know, I got tapped by a search firm to work for a consulting group that worked with foundations around the country. And I didn't know anything about philanthropy, and I didn't know much about foundations. And but what I did know was that I was always frustrated with the inability of public programs, government programs, to innovate, to test new ideas. And so the sector of philanthropy actually can do just that. I was intrigued by, again, this whole world that opened up for me when I got this call of foundations that were doing really interesting things around the country, had a little more flexibility to work with marginalized populations, poor communities, than public dollars actually do. So I made the jump, and I actually ended up at the Annie E. Casey Foundation, which is based in Baltimore, Maryland, does a lot of work around children's issues in this country, great organization. And while there, I was always more focused and extremely concerned about the disparities that we see, particularly racial disparities, on every indicator of well-being, whether it's education, health, child welfare. That foundation was funding in all
those areas.
And I'm
sure you, even working with the USDA, you saw a lot of disparities there as well.
Definitely. I mean, this is something that, you know, you can't really get away from when we're talking about improving people's lives. The questions and the issues about who's struggling the most are right in front of you. And so philanthropy, again, was a way to address some of these tougher issues, use dollars more flexibly. My work at Casey led me to ABFE. And what I was doing at one foundation, I now get to do with many foundations around the country, which is to help them get more intentional around addressing issues of racism, quite frankly, racial equity, and thinking more intentionally about how to make substantive change in Black communities.
Okay, so I was watching a video. You were talking about when you thought you were going to lose your job, when you spoke up.
Yeah.
You know, and it was so empowering, and that's really what the video was about, the ABFE, the APFE Empowers video. And, yeah. I mean, it was truly empowering just as being a female and a Black female and knowing how difficult it is to speak up.
Yeah.
What at that moment, how did it change your life knowing that people are actually listening now, knowing that they heard you?
In terms of in that situation, do you mean?
Yeah, in that situation, right?
I was talking about on the video.
Yeah, they pulled you to the floor. You know, you were pulled in front of how many people, and
about
you thought that
yeah,
and you thought it was just gonna be it was not gonna work in your favor, and you knew you're gonna have to pack up and go home to mom, maybe, you know.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
And
that's
the
right.
fact, and just that it flipped. You know, the results from that. How did you feel at that point?
You know, I actually used that experience, which was a huge, you know, incident in my professional career, to challenge and to really encourage leaders that are coming up after me in this sector and other sectors as well, to just be authentic. And just trust your gut and do what's right. And, you know, it proved for me when I didn't ask for permission, but rather forgiveness, when I moved ahead with an agenda without having the powers that be bless it, and took, you know, some pretty hard hits, yet it changed the foundation. And it literally led me on to a professional career. Again, here at APFE, where I'm working with many foundations around the country, it was an amazing moment. But again, sort of the fodder for really working with next generation leaders today. I will meet with this class of 11 who I have not met yet tomorrow, and my words of encouragement for them come from that experience. Trust your gut. Speak truth to power, be authentic, ask for forgiveness, not permission, move an agenda for our people. And it was a turning point for me. Hmm. Yeah.
Wow. That's powerful. Who is Susan Batten? Susan Taylor Batten. Who is she? Prior to the career, more so, who was she? And what was it in her that led her to being a philanthropist and speaking up for other people?
You know, Susan Taylor Batten is the daughter of Eugene Singleton Taylor and Jean Maiden Taylor. And Eugene Taylor and Jean Maiden Taylor were a part of the village. You know, we always, you know, throw out that frame, it takes a village to raise a child. My dad was a longtime educator and teacher in New York City public schools. When he wasn't teaching during the day, he was running youth centers at night. When he came home on the weekends, he never rested. My dad used to run homework clubs in our basement when I was growing up in Long Island, New York. My mom was a community health nurse, helped raise, I would say, generations of families in Wyandanch, Long Island, New York, a pretty tough neighborhood. She was the Girl Scout troop leader. She was the head of the Parent Teachers Association. And I am very much my parents' child.
I was taught
that we need to organize our communities, our families, and ourselves. We need to live by the principles of collective responsibility and taking care of our own. And I think, you know, every day I thank my mom and my dad for teaching me about how to live the values again, of collective responsibility and taking care of our own. That's me.
And we thank you for giving that gift to us as well. What information to the community that you would like to put out there? What is it that we should know that will be helpful?
Well, you know, we have spent the last several days talking with a number of community leaders in Chicago, doing amazing work around this city. I would just let folks know, and I'm learning, that Chicago has got just a plethora of critical organizations. I lift up Kenwood Oakland Community Organization, or COCO, for example, a plethora of critical organizations that are doing work on the ground in Black communities, other communities of color here in Chicago that really need support and really need investment. And I just ask that not only the philanthropic community here in terms of foundations, which there are many, but also individuals get to know the grassroots community organizations that are doing this work day in and day out, organizing families and neighborhoods so that, in fact, they can move their own agendas, that you all have got a number of them here, and they need support. They need assistance. They need money. So I would just leave that for your listeners. We've learned a lot from community leaders here over the last several days. The fellows are taking all those lessons back to their home communities. We've got fellows from 8 states and 11 foundations here meeting this week. And they're all going back with a little more hope and a little more vision because of what's happening here in communities in Chicago. So I just, you know, would lift up the leadership here, the community leadership here, and you know, the need for additional support.
And we should recognize the 13th class of APFE.
You want to hear a little bit about who they are?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
So as I said, we've got folks from, my gosh, 8 states, North Carolina, Maryland, Michigan, Washington State, New York, Colorado, California, Illinois. We've got some from the largest foundations in this country. Tamika Hart, for example, is with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Donna Francois with the W.K. Kellogg Foundation. Dirk Butler with the Annie E. Casey Foundation. Others rounding out this cohort, Amelia Cobb, Melanie Allen, coming up from Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Candace Johnson is here from the Colorado Trust out in Denver, Colorado. Raphael Turner is with the Ruth Mott Foundation in Flint, Michigan. And I know I'm missing a number. Tariq Ward with Elma Philanthropies in New York. These are amazing, amazing leaders. There's Thina Robinson Mock, Bonita Robertson, and Caroline McCoy rounding out the group from the McCormick Foundation. So we've got Illinois represented in the cohort. These are amazing group of leaders, and we're really excited about their future and the impact that they will have, again, not just for Black communities, but for all communities through their philanthropic careers.
All right. Well, we're excited as well. And we want to thank you guys because you're doing the work. You're putting in the time that's for us. And we appreciate that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Marcia. This is a great opportunity for us. Thank you.
What's some of the websites that we could go to learn some more things and maybe some social media information as well?
Yeah. So our website is www.abfe.org. We also have a Facebook page, which is, it's just ABFE. So you can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter, at ABFE. And I believe we're also on Instagram. So we've got the social media covered. But just Google us, ABFE, go to our website, and you'll see all the links to our social media pages and platforms.
Well, I truly appreciate it once again. And we're looking forward to any work that you guys are doing, and we'll be sure to spread the word as well.
Thank you so much, Marcia. That's a great opportunity for us. I appreciate it.
Shopee. Shy Petey.